Thank you for downloading our historical podcast. Your hosts are myself, Matt Nelson, and my good friend, Wayne Bridgman. So Wayne, what are the aims of this podcast?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Matt. It's a very valid question for our listeners.
Thank you.
The podcast aims to take a look at some of the characters and events from the rich tapestry of our past and take a factual and sometimes possibly light-hearted look at their stories. But what I'm interested in is, do we have a plan for this?
Ah, well, thanks for asking. I was thinking about the plan. The plan is to dip in some history that you like. You're not in any particularly chronological order, and share some stories with you that you don't know or thought you might have known, but you're in fact wrong. Only joking. Today we're going to talk about piracy, and in particular, a pirate called Edward Teach.
Now he Hang on. Edward Teach?
Yep.
It doesn't sound like very piratey to me, particularly, Matt. I don't think I would have had much terror struck into my soul by such a name.
Well, maybe not by the name Edward Teach, but let's talk about who he is first. Okay, so he was a man from Wiltshire in England who became to be known as one of the most infamous, nay, notorious pirates to ever sail the oceans.
Really?
I'm telling you. Listen, though his reign of terror in the Caribbean lasted but a few short years, in that time he became one of the most fiercest, most ruthless, calculating and cunning pirates of all time.
Wow.
Yes, wow, Wayne. Now, I bet you're thinking, as Wayne is, you know, that's rubbish, Matt. What are you talking about? Have you drunk too much of that Navy Strength rum you've got hidden behind your sofa that your long-suffering wife doesn't know about? I've never even heard of a pirate called Edward Teach.
And you would, of course, be right to think that of Matt, but you'd be wrong.
Yes,
although he probably does drink too much rum. He is sober for this podcast. That's contractual.
Yes, yes, I am. All I can say is it's been a tough year.
Yeah. Now, we know that pirates need a name that inspires fear and sometimes don't always use the name they were born with. For example, Big Boris, the butchering bastard, wouldn't sit well with a baby, Matt.
Yeah.
No, they need a name that people will remember, that will invoke terror when it finds itself on the lips of their prey. And Edward Teach is not the name of the pirate, it's merely the name of the man.
Okay, I think we get this now. So, Wayne, put yourself in a pirate's thigh-length leather boots.
Ooh.
And tell me how you would intimidate and scare your would-be victims.
Well, if I was a pirate, I would want to inspire pant-wetting and trouser-filling terror in my pathetic, gibbering victims.
Mm-hmm.
Their morale needs to be crushed, Matt.
Like a grapefruit.
Like a grapefruit is a brilliant example for this.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yep. The idea being that the battle was already won before I had to board the enemy vessel. They'd be terrified of me, Matt.
Well, mate, I'm terrified of you most of the time.
Well, then, you'd be right to be. So I'd want to win the mind game before I even throw the grappling hook over the side of the boat. Let's face it, any sane pirate is going to want to avoid potential combat because of the risk of injury, capture, or even death. That makes sense, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, now you come to mention it. So let me summarise that. So scare them so much that they are so terrified they can't grab their balls and fire one off.
What, like a broadside, you mean?
What's one of those?
Look, never mind. The point is, Edward Teach was not the only pirate to use a nickname.
Or a nom de guerre.
I think they could speak French, Matt.
Yeah, a Fermi Le Vautre.
I mean, shut the car, doesn't it?
Oh yes. Yeah, okay, move on.
Anyway, I was trying to make the point about pirate names here. For example, there was Jake the Pig, Bluebeard, Calico Jack, and the lesser-known Big Black Dick.
What?
Who, to many merchants, was a real pain in
Let me just interrupt you here, Wayne. This is a podcast, and I must admit, I don't recall finding out anything about, doing my research for this particular pirate you just mentioned.
Big Black Dick?
Yes, him again. Don't mention him anymore.
Well, come to think of it, actually, it might just have been my imagination, or I think I dreamt of him once.
Yeah, okay. So, who was Edward Teach? Well, Edward Teach was a man believed to have been born around 1680 and raised in the English city of Bristol. And at the time, Bristol was an international seaport for the English.
And it was very, very important seaport for the English.
It was indeed. Now, you don't get born into becoming a pirate. So,
Well, hang on. Well, what if you're the son of a pirate who then actually goes on to become a pirate?
Well, okay, in that particular example.
So I'm right.
Yes. But not this guy. So, and that's what we're talking about here. So like many boys in Bristol, he would have seen the sailors making their way around the brothels and the inns.
Coming and going.
Yeah.
Apparently, yeah, I heard there was two very popular inns
really?
At the time in Bristol, yeah. Yeah. The sailors, they used to love a place called the Root and Shoe. And the Fist Inn.
Well, I'm sure they were very popular, Wayne, and got their real thumbs up. So, with all this going on around him, and as a boy, he would have likely dreamt of becoming a sailor himself. And then when Teach came of age, he duly became a sailor in the service of the Royal Navy. Now, Queen Anne, the monarch of Britain, who was overseeing a war with the Spanish and the French.
Again, yawn. Yes, you're right, Matt. There was this war between the European powers. And Teach was lucky enough to be able to sign up during this tumultuous time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that is, tumultuous?
It's like something big, big and imposing.
That's fine, yeah. And he would have been looking forward to
Proud.
A bit of... He'd have been looking forward, Matt, to a bit of government-sanctioned pillaging.
What did that famous empiricist, David Hume, say about the plague of the Caribbean piracy?
Well, I'll see if I can remember the quote. Where there is turmoil, the opportunistic can get in there, nick stuff, and generally just create a right old nuisance of themselves and profit without fear of punishment. What with them being able to operate outside the law and all.
Yes, I think that was the gist of it. And by the way, well done for remembering that verbatim.
Thanks very much. So anyway, yeah, there is this war fought between the English and principally the Spanish around a part of the world called the West Indies. That's a number of islands we often choose today as holiday destinations, such as Jamaica, Bermuda and Antigua, to name but a few.
Wait a minute, didn't you take your wife up the Bahamas?
Well, for my honeymoon, you mean?
Well, if that's what it took.
At the time, these islands were vitally important for the trade and passage of gold, silver, spices and sugars that were produced and shipped throughout that area. Obviously, these commodities, they were hugely valuable to the European powers, Matt.
Hugely.
And yet they were always vulnerable because they're being transported by sea, of course. And therefore, it must come as scant surprise that these resources were often the cause for conflict.
So Queen Anne of Britain was very fond of booty.
She loved it. Really loved it.
Yes, she did. And she was eager as the next monarch of a major power to secure this booty for her own nation, as the country's coffers were in deficit thanks to a string of earlier wars and conflicts. Now, one wonders how she engaged with her privateers on this matter. Let's take a step back 300 years ago. Yeah? And take a rare peek into a typical conversation in the great lady's court between a privateer in search of a letter of marque and essentially her translator.
Wow.
Our queen wishes to say you must go to sea. Sail to the East Caribbean and harass and cause a darn nuisance of yourself to those swarthy, sweaty, handsome Spanish pig dog merchants. Our queen asks that you bring back black gold. Gold, silver, spice and Spanish heads. Oh, get me. So England can pay them off its national debts.
Yeah, this queen mean we can steal from those blasted Catalonians then, and you won't set the old Nicholas, no?
The Queen says yes.
So Edward Teach became a privateer. This allowed him and his crew to board and capture Spanish and French vessels, Matt, steal their rich cargoes of gold, silver, spices and sugars and the like, before sailing away, all with the Queen's blessing. The government in Britain at the time actively wanted our privateers to do this, and were very happy to receive the profit from their privateers when they arrived back in Bristol with their bounty. Although, having said that, it does sound a bit like piracy, doesn't it, Matt?
It does. Well, a privateer had a letter of marque from the Queen and her government that legalised their form of piracy, which is all well and good whilst the war is at full tilt and everybody's killing each other. But as often happens in these things, once the war is over, the government may be in a privateer, illegal, and anyone being found guilty of being a pirate would be sentenced and put into prison, or worse, be put to death.
Well, I mean, you say being put to death, that might have been bad because the prisons at the time were absolutely awful. You know, really don't want to be going there.
Yeah.
The food is awful. It's mm-hmm. It's rat infested. It's infested with lice. There's mm-hmm. disease. You know, yeah, you've really got a risk of not going to be coming out of that place.
No Xbox 360, no PlayStations. Yeah. So the government made a tidy profit from the exploits of the privateers, some £800,000.
A huge amount of money at the time, wasn't it?
Quite literally, a queen's ransom.
Yeah.
And the Queen Anne had this to say about it.
Is it?
Whilst Queenie appreciates the vast wealth you've brought to the coffers, thank you, it's now time that we stop this, okay? So stop it. The Queen asks that you put away those big guns of yours and you disperse your seamen. She now likes those lovely dark-haired, tan Spaniards. Unfortunately, there's always things that we enjoy in life that are legal. And privateering is now one of those. So be on your way and be good boys.
So Edward Teach fought in this war. He turned out to be a very brave privateer and proved to often distinguish himself for his uncommon boldness and personal courage in battle, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
It also must be said that he was a pretty intelligent man for the day. He could read and write, and yes, for the time, that was a pretty impressive thing in any walks of life, really.
Mm.
And particularly, most people in the Navy, and certainly most pirates, would have been unlikely to have known a vowel from a comma. And having a consonant would have meant you needed more fibre in your diet.
But when the war was over, Teach had very few options. Go back to a boring life in Bristol, remain in the Royal Navy.
Very hard life.
Yeah, which at times was not a very happy life.
Mm.
Or he could continue doing what he was, you know, good at doing and be a pirate. He could have fun and he could earn a fortune. So the decision for Teach really was a simple one.
So what was it?
So he became a pirate. And that's where he met the most feared pirate of all time, or at that current time, a man called Benjamin Hornigold.
He was horny for gold.
And he was very good at getting it. Now, Teach joined his crew sometime around 1716. Hornigold was considered one of the finest of the pirates of the time and was an excellent person to instruct in the oohs and the ahs of piracy. Hornigold placed Teach in command of a sloop that he had captured.
That's a small but fast ship. It's like a single mast, fore and aft rib, generally lightly armed. Carry on.
Yeah, absolutely. Before he was given his command, though, Hornigold sat him down and had a talk to him about his name.
Wah! 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 Me hearty! Now sit down here, young Teach. I need to talk to you about being a pirate. I may be three sheets to the wind right now, but I've been a-sailing, I tell you this, I've been a-sailing these seas many a year, and now I want to take my ill-gotten loot and live it up to our meeting the pirate master under the sea. If I can pass on one piece of wisdom to you, you need a name, son, that scares the men of an enemy ship to soil their pants. The whale like women seeing a scat scurrying across the poop deck of a ship. It will teach, you know, it won't just cut it.
Well, okay, old chap, but what do you think I should call myself? I mean, I don't have anything scary about me, really. It's just me and my 6'4" frame and
generally terrifying countenance, plus this big old black beard of mine to keep me warm when it gets cold up on deck.
I see the problem, look. After 10 years of being a pirate, I still go by the name of Ben Harnigold. I concede it's not the scariest or greatest of the pirate names, but I often hear the men scream as I come on board their vessels. Shiver me timbers! Watch your aft! Horny be coming on board! Or fire your guns, cause he's gonna pound you till you give up your booty! Hee-haw! Hoo-haw!
Sorry, old thing, I didn't quite catch that last bit. Never mind. So, what should I call myself? How about the evil teacher? You know, like a play on my name? I thought it was quite clever, really.
That might be the worst name for a buccaneer I ever did hear. Now look, a name like that won't make a man take a number two in his breeches. Okay, Teach, I'm gonna level with you. You're a man, are you not, with a black beard?
Well, quite, yes.
Okay, there is no pirate in this here sea that I know that is actually called Blackbeard. You see what I'm saying, Teach?
I think I do, yes. Well, yes, that's great. Thanks, Ben.
Okay, save the thanks. One last thing. We gotta work on that voice of yours.
What? I'd have you know I can be a very intimidating man. See that rascal there?
I see the man.
Well, listen to this.
Okay, I'm waiting.
I will give him what for. Hey, you there, fellow shipmate.
Uh-huh.
Jolly well stand down now or I'll give you a bloody good hiding. Ugh.
Piss off, you
twat.
Work on that voice, Teach.
So not only did Blackbeard perfect his voice, he worked on his image. Picture the man standing before you now. He was large. A very tall man at 6'4". A thick black beard spilled down his chest to his waist.
Well, that's right, Matt. Actually, if I can just jump in there. Captain Charles Johnson.
Ah, yes, him.
He gave a good description, actually, of Blackbeard. He's the British author of a 1724 book, A General History of the Robberies and Murders of the Most Notorious Pirates.
Spelt with a Y.
Yeah. He described him as, quote, such a figure that imagination cannot form an idea of a fury from hell to look more frightful.
Yeah.
Unquote.
It's good. I mean, whether Johnson's description was entirely truthful or embellished is unclear. But it seems likely that Blackbeard understood the value of appearances. Better to strike fear into the heart of one's enemy than to rely on bluster alone.
Indeed.
So Teach also wore sort of knee-length boots, dark clothing topped with a wide hat, and sometimes a long coat of brightly coloured silk or velvet.
Wow, that must have been truly terrifying to someone like Gok Wan or something like that.
Yeah. Well, Johnson also described Teach in times of battle as wearing a sling over his shoulder, 3 brace of pistols hanging in holsters like bandoliers, and struck lighted matches under his hat. The latter, apparently, to emphasise the fearsome appearance he wished to present to his enemies.
Well, actually, Matt, the theme of intimidation could also be seen on his flag. Now, he wasn't a Jolly Rogerer, he was heterosexual, but it depicted a skeletal figure spearing a bleeding heart with one hand, while the other hand apparently was raising a toast to the devil.
And if you picture that, that is a great pirate flag, isn't it? So with Teach now officially named Blackbeard, he teamed up with Hornigold, and the two feared pirates proceeded to terrorise the waters of the Caribbean. And over this time, they believed to have captured 6 ships, which ultimately became part of their combined flotilla.
Well done for saying 6 ships there, actually. It's not easy, easy one to get out. I should point out, actually, that a flotilla is actually a group of a number of ships that sail together in formation, commonly. Carry on.
Yeah, no, useful. Thank you, Wayne. And this would have presented a formidable sight to the skittish merchant shipping. I'm surprised you didn't pick me up on skittish. It was here that the Blackbeard captured a French merchant vessel called Le Concorde.
That is French for the Concorde, carry on.
Yep. And he renamed this ship the Queen Anne's Revenge.
Much better.
A relatively famous ship, especially from the latest Pirates of the Caribbean film. And he fitted her out with 40 guns and a crew of over 200.
Which is quite a powerful beast for the time.
Yeah.
And with that ship, in late November, near St. Vincent, he attacked a ship called the Great Allen.
The Great Allen. I have to say, Wayne, that's not a particularly imaginative name for a ship. You know, you've got Queen Anne's Revenge, the Great Allen.
Yeah, it's pretty terrifying. It's the Great Allen, chase her down with the dangerous Keith.
It's not, yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, after a lengthy engagement, he forced that particular larger and more well-armed ship to surrender. He ordered her closer to the shore, disembarked her crew, emptied her cargo holds. After all, he's a pirate. What do you expect?
B-A-U.
Yep. And he burned and sank the vessel. It is worth saying at this point, actually, that Blackbeard is not actually thought to have killed any of his hostages or even treated them badly. Certainly not regularly, anyhow.
Yeah.
Although that said, there's no proof for that, but you'd have thought if he was that awful,
yeah,
you know, people would be writing about it more regularly.
So as piracy became more frequent in the Caribbean, the pirates needed a place to stash their loot, and storing it in Davy Jones' locker
If I could just jump in there, I think it's an important point. Davy Jones' locker, that's an idiom for the bottom of the sea. It's like a place where drowned sailors and shipwrecks are condemned to remain. Yeah, they're like locked in there, condemned. But Davy Jones is basically the naval version of the devil.
Very interesting. Thanks, Wayne. Okay, so the waters of the Caribbean were not as well explored then as they are now, and the pirates found a place to call home there. They found an island near the Bahamas. It was uninhabited, and at the time they called it New Providence.
Well, that's right, and it became a base for their operations, actually. And the reason being, it was within easy reach of the Florida Strait and its busy shipping lanes.
Oh, indeed. There were lots of loot there. Oh, me hearties, lots of gold.
Yeah. Thanks, Benjamin. Yeah, the area was stuffed with European vessels, all full of booty, wanting to cross the Atlantic. At its busiest, you probably had like 1,000 pirates or so living on the island, and it was likely to be that, you know, it's like the nearest place to the Pirates of the Caribbean ever got to in their own country.
Yeah, do you know what? I bet you could smell it before you saw the place.
Yeah,
I bet it smelled pretty bad.
Awful. Awful, actually. And in the film The Pirates of the Caribbean, at World's End, you know, that sort of, we all know that franchise, the city of the pirates in that is most likely inspired by this place, New Providence, and the pirates that live there.
Yeah. I mean, life on a pirate ship was actually a lot easier than being in the Royal Navy. Pirates could vote for their captain, so they had a democracy. And often they would replace him if he or, let's face it, was he. I was going to say he or she, but it was pretty much a he, was unlucky or not ambitious enough. Money also kept the pirates happy. Each pirate was allowed an equal share of the prize, the loot. So, Blackbeard, as captain, how did you fairly divide up the loot among your crew?
Well, it'd be a captain's prerogative to be fair to his crew, so it does. And make sure I keep their undying loyalty.
So, just to press you on that then, you divided the loot straight down the middle, did you?
That's right, son. Straight down the middle, so it was. 75-25.
75-25? That doesn't sound like the middle to me.
It don't matter. None of the buggers can count anyhow.
So a pirate's lot was not all that bad. Whereas in the Navy, the sailor was paid a wage, he also had the whip, and the cat of nine tails was used to keep him in check. So it was a much harder life, with less obvious rewards and promotion opportunities.
Yeah, and Blackbeard and Ben Horn of the Gold's partnership did not last long in 1717, actually. So, taking advantage of the British Empire's frequent amnesty programmes and his growing fear of the Royal Navy, Horn of the Gold decided to call it a day and sought out a pardon before sailing off to retire the life of an ex-pirate king.
Fare ye well, Blackbeard. I'm going to the Bahamas to retire. I think I'll take the two ships past that pretty reef there we saw a few days back. And then it'll be a long retirement for me. Ha ha! You know, I got away with all that pirating. Ha 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 ha. Hee ho, butler rum. Ho ho, off she races. Hee ho, off she races. Hee ho, off she races. Too late in the morning.
All the gold ship was wrecked on a reef 2 days later, and he died.
So, by 1717, Blackbeard had teamed up with a pirate called Stede Bonnet. Now, Stede was an ex-army major and a Barbados plantation owner. And Stede was known in the seas as a gentleman pirate. That was his nom de guerre, his nickname, because of his cultured background. And picture this guy, he often wore a powdered wig on deck. And he would read from his vast collection of books, sat on deck of his ship, reciting bits of poems and things along those lines. So not your typical pirates. And maybe he was one of the most unique pirates in the history of the Caribbean.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. Although one of the least successful, he actually became very famous for his not-so-pirate actions.
Well, yeah. I mean, for example, Bonnet lived on an estate, that large estate you mentioned in Bridgetown, it actually was in Barbados, with his wife. He retired there after a long and distinguished, so he said, career in the army.
Mm-hmm.
And this profitable sugar plantation of his, it brought him wealth, it brought him a pleasant lifestyle, but it's peaceful. It's probably about as good as you can hope for in those days.
Yeah, it's pretty damn good life, though.
Sounds good, doesn't it? Sounds nice. But it was 1717 when this middle-aged gent suddenly turned to piracy, without any particular reason that anyone can tell. So,
what do they reckon the reason was?
Well, the rumour goes that he used to argue a lot with his wife. Never pleasant, is it?
Yeah, well, that would do it.
Yeah, but also, he may have been bored with ordinary life. People were saying he's depressed. You know, he used to be in the army.
Yeah.
And going from the army to civilian life, as we all know, can be a bit tricky.
Difficult.
So.
And the point is, he'd been in the army, but he had not been at sea, and he had very little experience of what it was to be at sea and the pirate's way of life. And I sense if we thought about Stede Bonnet now, you know, and his behaviour, you know, he's a middle-aged man, he'd be,
buying a Porsche?
Yeah, buying a Porsche, he'd get a 20-something girlfriend.
Midlife crisis.
He's having a midlife crisis, exactly. Therefore, like any other pirate, Stede Bonnet actually purchased his ship, as opposed to stealing one, which, you know, as the pirates go, is not the way to do things.
Odd. It was odd, yeah. It's another one of these sloops that we hear so much about. It was called the Revenge.
Mm-hmm.
Had 10 cannons, so it was a small ship. Get in there, hit hard, get out with the booty. He also hired around 70 good seamen from the local towns and began his adventure throughout the Caribbean Sea from there. So his strategy of paying them well, his crew, kept him from being deposed because apparently he was actually a bit of an incompetent sailor.
Yeah.
And quite an experienced leader, despite his time in the army. However, Bonnet was able to somehow capture and plunder a few smaller vessels off the coast of Virginia and the Carolinas, but that's probably because the skill of his crew. So, Matt, why are we talking about this Bonnet guy anyhow?
Well, all will become clear, but suffice to say, he is another key pirate in the story of Blackbeard. So, Bonnet was off the coast of Florida when he first encountered Blackbeard and his ship.
The Queen Anne's Revenge?
Yeah. Now, Blackbeard visited Stede on his ship, and he soon realised that Stede Bonnet was a very pleasant pirate with good manners, impeccable dress sense.
Very nice.
Yeah. But it soon became clear that he lacked the scary, gonna rob you blind, kill everyone you know, prerequisite piratiness.
Is that a word, piratiness?
Well, if we said enough times, the Oxford English Dictionary will have to adopt it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So after this meeting, they felt it was in their best interest to pool their resources and form an alliance.
Right, like a meeting of psychopathic minds signed in blood on the flayed skin of their hapless victims.
Well, these guys were a little bit old-fashioned. They just shook hands.
Oh, it's quite nice.
Yeah.
Okay, well, after seeing Bonnet in action,
or more like inaction.
Yeah, Blackbeard soon realised that apart from being a ruddy nice guy, he was actually useless as a seaman and fairly worthless as a leader of men too.
Mm. And Blackbeard, who now had perfected his piratey voice, thus felt moved to speak to Stede about his naval shortcomings. He decided to table a solution to a delicate problem
and make an offer that Stede just could simply not refuse.
Stede, I've been thinking of a way to make your life better, so I have. You are without doubt a fine man,
of education and manners, but ask myself this, Steve, so I do. Should a man like ye be forced to endure the rigours of commanding a ship like the Revenge, Steed? I say nay. You're too good for this work, so I offer you a transfer to the more comfortable and spacious quarters of the Queen Anne's Revenge. What say ye, my hearty?
Thank you, Miss Blackbeard. But I really do like the life on the ocean of the waves, and my crew was simply being despair without me to leave them. So I say I left land to be a pirate, and I jolly well may make a good one. But it's kind and thoughtful offer, but I must decline it, good sir.
Well, maybe I did not make myself clear, Steve. Let's put it this way. You do as I say, or I cut out your gizzards and feed them to my parrot, Stephen. And if you're lucky, I'd only tie your arms and feet together and drop you off the side of the Revenge and kill the whole of you till you say yes. Now what say ye?
Okay, if you put it like that, then you do. Okay, but what I say is that, okay, please, that here, can I please take the wardrobe with me?
This is Hillstead, and my crewman Richards commands the Revenge from now.
Okay.
So Bonnet rolled onto his back like a little puppy and became a guest on the Queen Anne's Revenge. One of Blackbeard's lieutenants, Richard, who took control of the Revenge and the crew, much to Steve's frustration, was accepted and all the crew followed him. But, as we've said earlier, that's the diplomacy of pirates for you.
Yep, they are fickle beasts indeed.
Yes, they are.
Now, though Steve was as good as a prisoner on the Queen Anne's Revenge, he and Blackbeard actually formed a friendship of sorts.
How nice.
It's really cute. And his captivity was, by all accounts, quite a pleasant one.
That's nice to know.
Yeah, and Blackbeard was actually, you know, he was a hugely popular pirate, this guy, with his crew.
Yes, he was.
Charisma.
Yes, he liked
his rum.
Yes, he did.
He can consume it in vast quantities with his newfound friend, Steed.
It's a lovely bit of rum, this Steed, so it is. Has anyone got any port scratchings here at all? Steed, have you got any?
No, sir. They're all out of scratching, sir. But we have some of those lovely pimento olives stuffed with pepper, sir. Could I tempt you with one of those over there?
I'm sick of olive steed, so I am. I'll just stick to this rum for now. It's the only friend a pirate needs, be the bottle.
But what about me, sir?
Yeah, okay. You too, Steed.
So it seems to me that Blackbeard didn't seem to be such a bad dude. Are we forming an insight into the man's personality now?
Well, Blackbeard had to carefully protect and maintain his fearsome image and reputation. So we know that when he engaged pirate mode and moved to the attack, he would take a very aggressive, direct, fearless stance that was always the first and probably most effective weapon in his armoury.
Yeah, so while he was terrifying to his victims, we knew he had the charisma to retain the affection and loyalty of his crew.
Yeah, well, you say that, but apparently, yeah, he did have a good relationship with his crew, but there are reports that he accidentally shot one of his crew. It was his first mate. It was a chap called Israel.
What's a musket ball in the leg between a captain and his first mate?
Well, I wonder if that made Israel try and make a massive, disproportionate armed response on Blackbeard.
Well, maybe we should let this particular bit of satire go.
I doubt Israel would.
Anyway, he was not just popular with his crew. He was very popular amongst the ladies.
Sexies.
We know that Blackbeard's head could be turned by a lady, and if he was lucky, from time to time, there might even be a beautiful one. So, you obviously spent a lot of time at sea, Blackbeard. A man has needs. How did you manage to, you know, meet those needs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You mean lasses, young laddie? You know what they say? Any port in a storm, you're a long time at sea, so you are.
Well, thank you. Well, so how did you and your crew deal with being isolated, though, from females for, you know, such long periods of time?
Let's just say that after a long voyage, there's a lot of seamen are waiting to get into that port.
So Blackbeard was married no less than 14 times in his life.
Jesus.
Yeah, a record that would get some Mormons jealous. Blackbeard was also respected as a sailor, and his seamanship was second to none. He was, after all, trained on the job by the best navy at that time.
That was the Royal Navy, obviously, British, yes. So...
Yeah, and he's the only pirate we know of to successfully take on a heavily armed Royal Navy vessel and actually force it into retreat.
Yeah, so by now, he's got both his flotilla and Steed ship, so the timing seemed just right for him now to come up with one of his most audacious actions yet. Mm-hmm. His plan may have just been a calculated risk, or necessitated by rumoured illness he picked up from one of his 14 wives. You'll see why.
So, Blackbeard, what was this illness that you suffered?
I can't lie to thee. I got a bad case of the clap, so I did. A case of woolly rots that burns like the fuse of a musket.
Oh, that sounds terrible. I mean, how did you contract this affliction?
It was up Carolina.
Oh, what? One of your 14 wives?
No, up the Strait of Carolina.
Oh, I see. That's where you got it.
Yeah.
So what was this plan? Now, the harbour port of Charleston was a hugely important trading port for merchants in the area. This would be his target. So Blackbeard sailed up to the Charleston Harbour Bar in the Queen Anne's Revenge. He was accompanied by three pirate sloops and Steed's Revenge.
Absolutely, my sense is there.
For 5 days, he blockaded the harbour, plundered any ships that came his way, and held the town to ransom. And actually, Matt, Blackbeard added a new tactic here, hostages. And his ship soon held a number.
Yeah, counts vary of that, from 5 to 25?
Something like that. Of influential South Carolinian Indians.
Yeah, so sort of people from South Carolina, basically.
Yeah, he held them as captives.
Okay, so sailing closer to the mouth of the Charleston Harbour, he sent a dinghy ashore with his ransom demands. So what did Blackbeard demand? It was not gold or silver, but it was medicine to treat his men and his ailment. He had laid siege to the wealthy port city and was in a position to demand a huge sum, yet he was demanding medical supplies from the stores in Charleston.
And several times during his 1718 siege of Charleston, Blackbeard had threatened to kill these hostages we talked about. But each time a deadline was broken by his adversaries at this port town, Blackbeard actually relented and spared his hostages and went on to maintain the blockade.
Yeah, and Blackbeard then upped the pressure on Charleston by advancing his heavily armed fleet into the harbour. The Queen Anne's Revenge, his flagship, carried 40 guns of her own, and if he had chosen to sack the city at this point with a crew of over 300, he may well have prevailed.
But it was not needed. The city, very wisely, chose to meet Blackbeard's ransom in the end, delivering a chest of medicines, and all without Blackbeard needing to fire one off, Matt.
A shot.
The siege was over, and the pirate released his hostages and just went on to withdraw.
The booty from the siege was not just medicine. He also captured and plundered 8 ships, reaping a reward of gold, silver and valuables worth over £200,000 in today's money.
Yeah, not bad, I suppose. And with the success of this siege and the promise of a pardon from the governor of Carolina, a certain Mr. Eden...
He'll feature a little bit about Eden a bit later.
Yeah, you'll hear more on him. Blackbeard decided to scuttle the Queen Anne's Revenge because, remember now, by this time, she was probably as recognisable as his bearded face. And then maybe he could go and get his pardon, Matt, and live the life of a respectable ex-pirate.
Yeah, and it was at this time also things... And it was a time of change, and he decided to part company with Steed's Bonnet. And Steed also sought a pardon, though... would later renege on the pardon and go back into piracy, and he would find himself the wrong side of the gallows in 1718.
Deed, do you have any last words to utter upon these gallows?
I have an important message. It's actually the most important thing I've ever had to say.
Throw the lever!
So Steed never really got to get out his final words, which, when we think about it, maybe that was a good thing.
Well, I think the execution was on a time limit. So Blackbeard may have wanted to go legitimate at this point. If he did, it certainly didn't last long. He entered into a deal with our friend Governor Eden.
Bloody Eden.
By which he would continue to raid the seas, and the governor would cover for him and keep the law, such as it was, off his back.
Now, the relationship, though, Wayne, with the governor bears some scrutiny.
Yeah, the governor attended Blackbeard's 14th and final wedding, bit suspicious, and was on very good terms with Blackbeard.
Well, the first thing Eden, Governor Eden, did for Blackbeard was officially license his remaining ship, the Adventure, as a war trophy.
Therefore, brown paper bag, stuff of cash.
You know the thing. Therefore, it allowed him to keep it legitimately. On another occasion, Blackbeard took a French ship laden with goods such as cocoa, and after putting the French sailors on a small ship, he sailed his prize back into port, where he declared that the ship had found the ship adrift and unmanned.
Found it.
Yeah, and the governor promptly awarded him the salvage rights to this, and of course kept a little bit to himself, you know, a bit of a side deal.
Another brown paper bag stuffed with cash. But Blackbeard did settle down to an extent, and he married his final wife, the 14th, remember this is. She was a daughter of a local plantation owner, so with her he built this home from scratch on Ocracoke Island. Now, he would often go out for a drink and carouse the locals. He likes a bit of fun, he likes his rum. And on one occasion, there was a guy called Pirate Captain Charles Vane, who came seeking Blackbeard, to try and lure him back to a life of pirating in the Caribbean.
But Blackbeard knew he had a good thing going. After all, he was pretty much doing what he wanted with the blessing of the governor. So he politely refused. Though Vane and his men stayed on Ocracoke for a week before Vane, Teach and his men had a good old rum-soaked party.
Local sailors and merchants soon tired of this legendary pirate haunting the inlets of North Carolina. Suspecting that Eden was in cahoots with Blackbeard, which it appears he was, they took their complaints to a guy called Alexander Spotswood.
Brilliant name for British.
Very British. Spotswood was the governor of neighbouring Virginia, who had no love for pirates, or for Eden, for that matter, Matt.
Yeah, and Spotswood had, for many years, warned those that would listen that the pirate threat needed to be addressed and dismantled. The Virginia governor knew well the damage that the pirates were inflicting to his colony. And he had just the man to carry out and dispose of the pirates, a certain Lieutenant Robert Maynard of the Royal Navy.
Come in, Maynard.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Reporting for duty, sir.
Yes, yes. Now, listen here, Maynard. It's reported this Blackbeard fellow fortifies Ocracoke Island. Now,
okay, sir.
Yes, once dug in, we will feel his putrid curse for many years.
Okay.
It's unacceptable to allow this nest of foul snakes to exist so close to our ports. Why, it would be New Providence all over again. They must be driven off, Maynard.
Yes, of course, sir. I will intercept this Blackbeard, sir. I shall bring you proof of my doing, sir. I will bring you his head, sir. Beard and all, sir.
Well, what is it? Spit it out, man.
Permission to be dismissed, sir!
Yes, off you go.
So Maynard departed from Virginia on his mission to capture and kill Blackbeard. There were two British warships in Virginia at the time, the Pearl and the Lime. Spotswood had made arrangements to hire some 50 sailors and soldiers off of these ships and put Maynard in charge of the expedition. Since the larger British vessels were too large to chase Blackbeard in the shallow inlets, Spotswood also provided two light support ships.
Yeah, so the hunt for Blackbeard was now officially on. The two support ships, the Ranger and the Jane, scouted along the coast for the well-known pirate. Blackbeard's haunts were well-known, and it didn't take Maynard too long to track him down.
Indeed. Late in the day, on November the 21st, 1718, they sighted Blackbeard off Ocracoke Island, but decided at the time it was prudent to delay the attack until the next day. Do you know what Blackbeard was doing at this time, Wayne?
Well, actually, it just so happens that I do know what Blackbeard was doing at this time, Matt, yes.
Well, that's pretty good for the podcast. I'm glad you do.
Yeah, okay. So Blackbeard, apparently, was with his men, parting it up with a fellow criminal smuggler type, mm-hmm. completely unaware, of course, of the approaching British ships.
Okay, so fortunately for Maynard, many of Blackbeard's men were ashore. On the morning of the 22nd, the Ranger and the Jane tried to sneak up on the adventure. One of the approaching vessels was soon spotted by Blackbeard's men and was fired upon as soon as they were within range of the guns.
Boom! While the approaching British ship made a hasty retreat to the Jane, Blackbeard cut Adventure's anchor cable and the sails were hastily hoisted by his well-drilled crew as the Adventure manoeuvred to point her starboard guns towards Maynard's ships, which were desperately trying to close the gap.
It was about this time, with the ships in earshot of each other, that the verbal exchange between Maynard and Blackbeard happened. According to Captain Charles Johnson, one of Maynard's men, Blackbeard said,
"Who are ye? And from whence come ye?"
"You will see by my colours, sir, that we are no pirates, sir."
"Send your boat on board, so I might better see who thee be."
"Sir, I cannot spare my boat, sir. But I will come on board you as soon as I can with my sloop, sir."
"Damnation seize my soul if I give you quarters, or take any from ye."
"Sir, I expect no quarter from you, sir. I shall give you none, sir." "Men, sirs."
"Yes, sir. What is your command, sir?"
"Sirs, fire on them, sirs."
Maynard then had his sirs unfurl the Union flag on each of his ships. This prompted Blackbeard's Adventure to turn toward the beach of Ocracoke Island, heading for a narrow channel.
So what happened next is uncertain. Some claim that there was an exchange of small arms fire, following which Blackbeard's Adventure may have run aground on a sandbar. Maynard then anchored before lightening his ship to allow him to pass over the same sandbar. Though another version claims that both the Jane and the Ranger also ran aground, although Maynard has made no mention of this in his log.
Well, it sounds like the sort of guy who might be embarrassed about that.
Yes, sir, I think he would be, sir.
Yes, thanks for that, Matt. Now, what is certain, though, is that Blackbeard's Adventure turned her guns on the two ships and fired. Well, he would, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
This initial fully loaded broadside was pretty devastating. And in an instant, Maynard had lost as much as a third of his men. In fact, about 20 on the Jane were either wounded or killed, and 9 on the Ranger. Remember, these are sort of the smaller support ships. It's going
absolutely
to be a big blow.
Seriously devastating, though. I mean, in the course of the battle.
Horrific.
Mm.
Plus, Maynard's second in command, Mr. Hyde, was killed, and his second and third officers either dead or seriously injured. So, straight away, Maynard now finds himself at an unexpected disadvantage.
The customarily aggressive Blackbeard, seeing the casualties and the confusion on the British ships, swung to and made to close the gap between him and the British. However, Maynard had kept many of his men below deck and in anticipation of being boarded told them to prepare for close fighting.
Yeah, at the same time, Blackbeard was watching as the gap between the vessels closed and ordered his men to be ready. The two vessels contacted one another as the Adventure's grappling hooks hit their target, and several grenades, they're sort of like made from like a ceramics with powder and shot packed in there, you know, and ignited by fuses, broke across the sloop Jane's deck.
In the blinding, smoky chaos aboard the Ranger, Lieutenant Maynard ordered his surviving crewmen out of sight and below deck.
"Sirs! Keep your sword and pistols at the ready, sirs! When they come aboard, sirs, we'll catch them napping, sirs!"
As Blackbeard stormed forward, leading his men from the front, he could see the dead and wounded sprawled across the boards of the crippled Ranger.
"They're all knocked in the head now, boys! But for a few, board her and cut them to pieces.
As the smoke cleared, Blackbeard led his men aboard, sensing victory at the sight of the apparently empty ship.
And moments later, Blackbeard's mouth fell open in shock as waves of seamen spurted forth from below decks.
Don't you mean Royal Navy seamen?
Yeah, sorry, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Anyway, from within the hold, the British Marines swept into Blackbeard and his small band of pirates. Smoke and fresh blood now again filled the deck of the Ranger. Blackbeard was seen to have fired pistol after pistol and swung his heavy cutlass into the fray.
Straight away, Maynard confronted Blackbeard. Both men pulled their pistols, aimed hastily, and both shot one off. Blackbeard's pistol misfired, but Lieutenant Maynard's miniball found its mark.
Rocked momentarily, Blackbeard recovered and staggered forward, swinging his cutlass wildly with such force that it broke Maynard's sword blade at the hilt.
Sir, you've broke my sword, sir. Sirs, surround him, sirs.
And against superior training and a slight advantage in numbers, the pirates were pushed back towards the bow, allowing the Jane's crew to surround Maynard and Blackbeard, who was by then completely isolated.
Blackbeard reared back again with his cutlass, but before he could strike a blow, one of Maynard's men joined the attack, slicing Blackbeard's throat with his sword. More Navy soldiers rushed in, and soon Blackbeard was covered in British seamen, firing, stabbing and slashing the pirate as he crumbled to the deck. It's believed that Blackbeard congratulated the soldier just before his head was cut off. It's rumoured Blackbeard's final words were,
"Well done, laddie. Yarr, yarr, arr, arr."
So that was the end of Blackbeard. Those left on the adventure were captured by the Ranger's crew, including a crewman who was supposed to set fire to the powder room and scuttle the ship. But for whatever reason,
Didn't make it. Confusion, man.
Varying accounts exist of the battle's list of casualties. Maynard reported that 8 of his sirs and 12 pirates were killed. Others have the numbers more considerable.
Maynard later examined Blackbeard's body, noting that it had been shot no fewer than 5 times and cut about 20. He also found several items of correspondence, including a letter from a pirate called Tobias Knight, the Chief Justice, a Secretary of the Province of Carolina. This shows that Blackbeard did indeed have his fingers in a few pies, including the Governor of Carolinas.
His pie, you mean?
Yeah, you know, like a political piece of pie.
Oh. Blackbeard's corpse was then unceremoniously dumped overboard into the inlet, while his head was suspended from the bowsprit of Maynard's sloop. This is so the reward could be collected, you know.
Yeah.
The known record of Blackbeard's deeds cover only 2 years, yet he has become perhaps the most widely known pirate of all time.
So Blackbeard's head was mounted on the bowsprit of the adventure, as it was needed for proof that the pirate was dead, so that Maynard could collect his sizeable bounty, sir. According to local legend, the pirate's decapitated body was thrown in the water where it swam around the ship several times before sinking.
No.
Yeah, let's face it, probably didn't happen.
Oh, right.
But it's a good story to tell the children. So more of Blackbeard's crew, including his boatswain, a guy called Israel Hands, remember him?
The guy he shot, wasn't it?
That was it, were captured on land. Israel didn't even make it to the fight.
Yeah, which is strange for him. Of these captured, 13 were hanged. Israel Hands avoided the noose by testifying against the rest of the crew.
And, turncoat, huh?
Yeah, and because a pardon offer arrived in time to save him as well.
Oh, so, handy.
Blackbeard's head was then hung from a pole on the Hampton River, and now the place is now known as Blackbeard's Point, and some locals say that his ghost still haunts the area.
Maynard had found papers on board the Adventure which implicated Eden and Tobias Knight in Blackbeard's crimes. Eden was never charged with anything, and Knight was eventually acquitted, in spite of the fact that he had the stolen goods at his home. So no change there. Even in the 18th century, the rich were escaping prosecution, so it's not just a modern phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very good point, actually, yeah. Now, Maynard became very famous because of his defeat of the mighty pirate. Being a man who went by the book, he eventually sued his superior officers. This is because they actually decided to share the bounty money for Blackbeard with all the crew members of the Lyman Pearl, not only those ones who took part in the raid.
Wow, so the ones that didn't really risk anything still got paid.
They did.
No wonder he was annoyed. Mm. Well, Blackbeard's death marked his passing from man to legend. In death, he became far more important than he ever was in life. He came to symbolise all pirates, which in turn have come to symbolise freedom, adventure...
Yeah, and terrible criminal activity, and rape, and murder, just saying.
Yeah, thanks Wayne. His death is certainly part of his legend. He died on his feet, he went out swinging, a pirate to the very last. No discussion of pirates is complete without Blackbeard and his violent end. Thanks for listening to our historical podcast. This is our first outing, and we hope you've enjoyed listening to it as much as we've enjoyed making it for you. We want to develop this podcast for you, the listeners, so we would appreciate any feedback you can give us. Wayne, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Actually, Matt, yes, I have.
What is it?
We'll see you next time.